nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and a very good evening to you listening to Nationwide. My name is Sunny Martin and we are coming to live from Juba this evening. Today we are going to be looking at sexual gender-based violence. As given the conflict and the ongoing displacement in the country, sexual gender-based violence remains a major concern across the states and Central Equatorial State in particular. And SGBV prevention and response programming represent an ongoing and critical needs of displacement and conflict-affected households. The Federation of Women Lawyers, in partnership with GIZ South Sudan, presented their findings and the recommendations aimed at harmonizing community and police relation for a better GBV prevention. That is gender-based violence prevention, response, and case management. So the people who are behind all these initiatives, the program manager joins me right now here in the studio, Barbara Aromom, who is the program manager for GIZ FIDA, Strengthening Peace Process Project. And our lines will be open to you later on, where you can call us on 091206-2079 or 091206-2950 and ask your question. Good evening, Barbara, and thank you so much for making time to come to our studio during your busy schedule.
Thank you so much, Sunny. I'm always happy to come to Watu Muraya.
Okay, first of all, before we go into the details of your findings and your recommendations, what do you make of the rampant raping and killing of young ladies this time in the country? The latest is what we saw in Gumbo, Sherikat, on the last Wednesday.
I don't think it's rampant. I think right now it's just that we are in a time where we are now reporting. People are now aware that this is an actual thing that is wrong. And this is something now people are more open and willing to actually call out as a crime. We have actually been living in a culture of silence, you know, that has always been hiding these culprits and everything. So I'm actually very, it's not a new thing that it's just happening now. It's just that we never spoke about it. It was always an undercover thing. So now I'm actually very happy that, not that it's happening, but now that people are actually
reporting.
They're seeking justice. And actually, we are actually in a time where we are trying to strengthen the mechanisms for them to get that access to justice.
And from FIDA, when you hear all this, what goes on in your mind as a team, as a Federation of Women Lawyers in the country? So what is the best way of handling this before we go to the discussion of this evening?
It is heartbreaking because, I mean, this is something that you never wish on anybody to ever happen, you know. And you're seeing many of the cases that are coming up are cases of children. And so it's really heartbreaking. And we as FIDA, we are actually trying to work close with our international and national partners. And we built very strong networks where we have a referral pathway that is able to, victims are able to reach assistance at whatever level they have. We have partnered with Crown the Woman, who have actually assisted us in psychosocial support and even temporary housing of some of these victims. We have Young Positive, who we work closely with, who actually not only handle SGBV, but even the impact of HIV and AIDS in the community, especially with among the youth, and even the prevention measures. So we are building a network that is actually, even us now with our advocacy, creating awareness around it, making sure people know what numbers to call, what to do when it happens, where to go, and how to handle it. That is also, it's something that it's giving us, seeing the numbers rise of reporting are actually what are encouraging us, because this was the foundation of this project. We were concerned that whenever we would go to that one-stop center where we have a desk, you would see the numbers are quite high, but then when you go to the police station, some of the numbers are lower than, you know, and most times are not those that are reported. It's just that there was a complication, you know, an STI, a rupture, an injury, a physical injury.
Yeah.
And that's why they went to hospital, not even because it happened, you know. So these are the things that we are trying to tackle. Why were the numbers low? You go to the judiciary, and as of 2020, we had 4 pending cases, you know. 2021, the numbers rose to 127. Now we have 78 cases pending in Juba 2022. But again, we are now, is that that we are...
So these are figures within Juba alone?
Yes, because the GBV court that actually was what I was discussing about when last time I was here is just based in Juba. And those are also part of the policies that we are trying to change to try and see how we can trickle it down to the state levels.
Okay, yes. Now tell us more about this project. The obvious question is... what should have compelled the Federation of Women Lawyers in partnership with GIZ to embark on this initiative?
For GIZ, they are one of the international partners that are interested in seeing South Sudan prosper, especially with regards to our peace processes and transitional justice process in implementing the peace agreement. So as part of the strengthening peace processes, they gave out a call and we responded. And out of the work we've been doing in FIDA, we saw the best way is, one, of course, advocacy on the SDG 5, which is gender equality, and SDG 16, which is institutional building. So we felt the need to, one, advocate around this issue and also try and strengthen the institutions that are part of the criminal justice system. So this time around, we focused mostly on law enforcement and police mainly.
So what are your findings?
Well, we discussed with very many groups of the community. We talked with the people at the IDP camp in Jebel, POC 3 and 1. We discussed with the Jamajuba students, Faculty of Law. We discussed with the upper primary students and high schoolers, those youth who are most likely to be in conflict with the law.
Mm-hmm.
We discussed with community leaders. We discussed with religious leaders, both Islam and Christianity. And these were very open discussions. They were very open about it. We were trying to get to the bottom of the community's feelings towards the police and why do they not feel comfortable.
So you are basically talking about reporting.
Yes, yeah. Reporting. And so they gave us, of course, the culprit number one is always culture. You know, we do not talk about these things.
So once a woman is raped, she can't talk about herself to keep quiet, right? That's the culture, the taboos.
It appears, you know. And not only that, not even just rape, because GBV is very wide.
Yeah.
GBV goes all the way to child marriages, you know, which are very rampant in our country. GBV goes into forced marriages, which are very rampant in our countries.
Mm-hmm.
These kidnappings for marriage, these are very rampant in our country. So it's not just even in that sole context of rape. So just very many aspects of it. Emotional abuse, you know, this abusing of women and belittling them, you know, this economic abuse. You cannot work, stay at home, and you're not even provided with support. All those elements that cause GBV that have been rampant, we were trying to see how we can address them with the community leaders and those who have been tasked by the government to deal with it, which is police.
So let's begin with the community before we go to the police. From the community, what were some of the issues beside the issue of the culture? What are their challenges really?
Outside of that, of course, it was a mentality aspect. You know, there was, of course, they were very open about a fear of police. You know, we are a post-conflict country and we do not, all we've been seeing is guns.
Yeah.
So even that fear is still in us, you know. And of course, even the reaction of it, very many women had gone and found the wrong cop. You get the wrong reception, you know, you ask the wrong questions that even re-stigmatize and re-traumatize you, you know. What did you do to make him beat you? What were you wearing? You know, show us how he raped you. Those questions that even... and they're very serious about
this.
So you
have
thing.
To show them. That's serious.
And it's crazy, you know. But those are the things that the community was open about, you know. Outside of that, even access to the stations. Some of them are not really down there at the grassroots. There are some areas, the closest law enforcement is the Sikahila or the chief.
Yeah.
You know, so even that police, the SPU unit, you know, is not there. There was an element of even that they were unaware, you know. Again, some of these cases of violence are ingrained in our culture and way of life. So you're even unaware that it's a crime. So even just, it even gave us awareness of why we should even create awareness around the laws that we have that are against this GBV. Because some people honestly didn't know. Some people honestly saw, it's something that happens, you know.
It's a normal thing.
I was married at a young age. My grandmother was married at a young age, you know. So it's all those things that culminated. And we were just fortunate that we had a very honest group that were willing to share about their experiences.
Okay, from the police... I'm sure you have interacted with a lot of security agencies. Mm. What are their challenges?
Well, we called upon the SPU unit, which is headed by General Brigadier James Dark.
Yeah.
I've raised his rank.
He's a colonel. Yeah.
He's a colonel. Yeah. I've raised his rank. But his door is always open to us, and he's a very close ally and partner to FIDA. And we reached out to him, and he said, no, we should increase only, not just SP unit, because we have also gotten cases of some element of discrimination and harassment from other arms. And also, not even forgetting the other elements of law enforcement that need that support. The prisons that house these culprits, or even those women who break the law trying to get away from the survivors, you know? That those women who end up killing their abusers, and the law, as they say, has to take force. So they're there, but we also need to see how the prison can help those survivors as much as they're rehabilitating. The issue of those, how do we rehabilitate those ones who are in jail, or is it even just a conversation around, are they rehabilitable? Those are the discussions we wanted to hear with those people who are with them day in, day out. We called the immigration and immigration department, and they came in, because some of even the reports we were getting, women are not got problems traveling with their children. You know, you go there, especially if you don't have the letter from the father like that. You know, and fine, it's one thing to ask, it's another to start harassment, and why are you traveling with another man's child
without his permission?
You know, you're stealing a man's child, and this is a mother.
Yeah,
you know, so some of these policies that we might have in the law itself that might be discriminatory. The constitution says women, you're a citizen by birth, by virtue of your mother and father, but when you go to register, you need a male.
Yeah, to confirm.
So those are the things we wanted to discuss. How do we get around these issues and all? And we tend to forget police are members of our society.
Yeah,
they're members of our community, and even them are, they're susceptible to bias, you know. Of course, they agreed. Even us, the culture is there. Sometimes you might want to do your work, you know, that you hear, indeed, this child is underage. You know she's underage and she's being married off, but you go on arrest and you see your boss dancing with the Zolkebir marrying the girl. You know, hands are tied, you know. Some of these things, they said even them themselves are tied, because you're fighting an army sometimes.
Yeah,
you know, we've had survivors who have been assaulted by people in the barracks. Now you're going there with police into Giada to arrest people. How, you know, these now, elements.
Now the question is: this is special protection unit from the police. I think it's based in Gudele Block 8, under the leadership of Colonel James Dark,
yes,
who is also the deputy police spokesperson. Are they helpful for these survivors of the SGBV? Do they get justice at the end of the day?
They are, because we forgot, as I said, there are cases that are pending, and there are some that have been successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been because of a competent police team that has managed to do clear investigations, that managed to keep the survivor safe, that have managed to keep the survivor harm-free and away from, you know, intimidation from the family. They have managed to not be bribed, you know. So even part of that, despite the challenges they have, not having enough office space to do the interviews, besides not having sometimes electricity, sometimes not having the rape kits, sometimes not having the forms, they're working under very harsh, sometimes harsh conditions. So we always celebrate the win, because when we can finish a case at the end of the day, that is a win for the justice system, because it has been tested and we managed to pull through.
So this is done here in Central Equatorial State, or you did it all over the country?
This project was initially for Central Equatorial Juba County.
Yeah.
And it was an inception project to try and test the waters. And we are very hopeful that we've had a lot of responses, we've had a lot of support, and we have had a lot of knowledge and to try and inform our next project, to expand to the grassroots. As we've mentioned, we need to take these trainings to the grassroots. We need to take our soldiers to our police to the grassroots. So that's now the next step, trying to make it accessible.
Okay, and I'm sure if you can get as much as possible here in Juba. What about in the States? Like, for example, we have been hearing of late in United States, Lehigh County, where the cases of rape has been so much, issues of gender-based violence is also on the rise, given our economic situation right now. So when do you intend to move to the States? Is it soon, or has you get funding?
We actually in talks with our partners. There's a project we currently are doing with UNDP outside of Juba, outside of Central Equatoria. It's still in the initial steps, but we'll be located in Wau. And for now, we are trying to see how, what comparisons and parallels we can get from those, from what we learned from there and what we have learned from Juba. But outside of that, we have also worked in Bor, we have also worked in Torit with the help of the Catholic Church. So we feel that, of course, the exposure is much needed. But even then, we are grateful for this far we have come here.
Now, what are some of your recommendations after hearing from both sides?
I think one of our key recommendations is to understand security is everyone's job. It's everyone's job. And we all have our roles in our different capacities. The police, have, as we have seen, have their role in investigating and trying to prevent and also just not mess up a case. But even us as civilians, we've had their cries. We've had their issues of lack of infrastructure. We have had the lack of equipment. We have had their issues of lack of pay or adequate human resource. So it is us now as citizens to now turn to our policymakers and also ask them, what are we doing to now make sure our men and women in uniform are able to protect us?
In your findings, are there men also who have fallen victims of this SGBV?
Yes. Usually, men don't usually say it. They don't usually come out.
Why?
And the most ego, shame, fear, because it's a human thing, you know? And of course, we have this idea that SGBV is something that happens to women, you know. As a man, how can it happen to you? We've had cases where men have been raped. And of course, our first reaction has always been laughter. How are you laughing at this person, you know? We go back and be raped again. You know, such weird, ludicrous things, you know. So even that now even makes men even try and stay away. And even just, and a lot of it, which is sad, it happens to our boys. It happens to our young boys. And the thing is that we raise our boys to really be hard, not vulnerable, not open, and not able to talk about these things. So they bottle it up, and, you know, all these things culminate in other things, you know, be it through numbing of drugs, be it through whatever aspect. But this is something also we need to address, not only as a girl thing, but also it happens to the boys.
And why do you think reporting of these gender-based violence is very important in trying to minimize and all to expose? Why?
It's a deterrent. In fact, we work very closely with these police and even the judiciary. At the judiciary there's a very capable High Court judge called Justice Francis Amum, and he's a serious guy. He will lock you up. And we have seen it really whenever you see him go to the prison, and the deterrent is there.
Yeah.
And the thing is that we now need to show that the justice is being achieved, because one of the problems is also impunity. We have seen so many people get away with things in various aspects. So it also now hinders the people to grab about how will I get justice, you know? How, just me, you know, how will I get justice?
Yeah.
So it hinders them from that. But us being able to talk about these things, sharing the success stories that we have had, sharing the strength of the institutions we have. The judiciary is actually quite capable, the GBV and the juvenile court. The SP unit is there and they're willing to work. They've shared their frustrations. The ICT unit has shared their challenges, and, you know, so we now know what we need to get them there. Now it's just us to push through outside of strengthening those institutions.
Right. And what can be done to encourage more people to come forward and begin reporting?
I think one of also a thing that was raised, especially when we were talking with the community leaders, I remember the chiefs actually mentioned that was a first workshop that they had ever attended on this issue.
Yeah.
So even them themselves, they were learning something new that day, similar with some of the religious elders and the likes. So even them, who are most times are not the first contact of law, in the, you know, the first person who can actually assist these vulnerable survivors. We need to educate them, and we also need to empower them in their own capacity as we also wait to get the institutions there. So us as a community, let's have those discussions. We're in talks with the county government of the Central Equatoria on actually having to town halls where community can meet. If it's women only, men only, we see how we can guide these discussions and we see how we can help. Many parents have raised their concerns, especially around the youth, and we're trying to work on how we can help the youth, be it after school problems, be it teaching about these things, but also even the parents themselves need to also go through such conversations.
Yes, if you have just joined us right now, you are listening to Nationwide. My name is Annie Martin, and my guest today is Barbara Aromo, who is the program manager for GIZ FIDA Strengthening Peace Process Project, and they have carried out, a research or their findings to find out why many people are not reporting issues to do with the gender-based violence. Once a woman is beaten, sometimes she does not want to go and report it because of fear you have heard from her. Sometimes there are these issues of small girls below the age of 18 being forced to marriage as early as you can imagine, without her finishing her education and getting to that age where she can be in position to decide for her own self. You can call us on 0912062079 or 0912062950. Those are all our lines. Or you can send us a short SMS, like what Atem Dow brought from Twitch East County have just done, and he's asking a question of how can you end the issue of GBV in South Sudan when the rule of law are not being applied uniformly.
Well, I think also part of it was actually through the policy change. Currently, we are trying to expand the penal code, because in the penal code we only have the assault of rape that is on record, but we are hoping to have, we've been having the GBV bill that has been in discussions and production with the Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare together with other stakeholders, and we're trying to have it passed as soon as possible. And the thing is that once we are able to have a wider scope of GBV, that is how now we'll be able to have more institutions around it, because it also, not only are we going to impart rights, it also brings in obligations and duties in different offices. So as I've mentioned, the laws do apply. I think it's also for us also to try and, like, we spoke of Lair and the baby who was killed by the
in Gumbo Sherikat.
No.
In our will.
Yes, in our will. And I think we were very excited. We were very happy about the ruling and the death penalty and the imprisonment of the two. And I think it's also good to understand the law a bit, because he got the death penalty because he killed her.
Yeah.
Had she survived, he would have gotten the mandatory 14 years minimum.
Yeah.
And of course in South Sudan a year is 9 months, so he would have been out sooner. So even us, we also need to understand the laws are applying. There are some that but now you see, you also have to push, because some of there are cracks in the system, you see. And for us to actually go out and try and strengthen these institutions, we're trying to identify these cracks, and that's why we call upon to people. We went out to the community first. Where do you see the cracks first? We saw the cracks. We went to the community. We went to the institutions. We showed them, these are the cracks. How can we fix them? And they also showed. So now it's for us as the community to push. When you see now that should we give them the tools? When we see them lax, we also now push. Because also part of it is holding them accountable. You know, part of the recommendation is also holding them accountable outside of the recruitment and everything. But should we also find you not unable to do your job, let us have a system to hold you accountable.
And many times we have been hearing this allegation of men in uniform. How much effort are you trying to put in engaging this men in uniform who are always being accused?
We are engaging greatly, especially now. If you know, part of the transitional justice steps is transitional justice, and without that, you need to get that, you need justice, you need honesty, you need openness and truth. So part of being a member of the Truth, Justice and Reconciliation Technical Committee under the Ministry of Justice, we are having these discussions with both the survivors on the ground and also the military structures. We are very fortunate that the Ministry of Defense has an open door policy to us, mm-hmm. similarly to the Minister of Interior, and even the guarantors. RJMEC is very supportive, and they've always been with the issue of a will, we ran to them first and asked them, we were very firm with them, you know. We called a meeting, the ambassador not around, but the chief of staff met with us together with the security advisors, and we actually asked, you know, from Tombra to Magui, to Koch, to Ler, what is happening? What are you observing? Because we keep on hearing women, peace and security.
Yeah.
And the good thing is that they actually went out, took action, and they've been actually, together with CITISAM, they have been giving us the reports, and we are able not to now make more evidence-based programming.
Okay. Yes, you can call us right now on 091206-2950 or 091206-2079. Those are all our lines. You can call and be part of our discussion this evening. Yes, my guest is Barbara Aromo. Hello? Hello? Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening to you.
Your name?
How are you? Daikwan.
Guy from Bentiu. Okay, Guy, go ahead, Guy.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. I just appreciate the topic. It is a good topic, my dear brother. And I appreciate the guest. So maybe I will have two questions. My first question. So now here in this hospital, it has a lot of guilty. They do the moral crime here in South Sudan about the GBB here. So my question: what kind of punishment do you give to the guilty? Who is already do the guilty to the female?
Okay.
And then secondly, maybe when that guy when you were captured by the government and then you were released again. Do you have able to have the one who released the guilty person? Or how do you to the guy who released the guilty person?
Okay. Thank you so much, Guy from Bentiu. You can still call us on 091206-2079 or 091206-2950. Those are all our lines. You can call and be part of our discussion. Hello? Hello? Yes, good evening. Okay, we do have a couple of questions coming in via our SMS number here. This one here is coming in also from Tootball from Akobo, and it says, why are we always talking about implementing the law, and yet here in South Sudan we hear on daily basis people falling victims, more especially the issue of GBV? Another question is coming in from Juba here with no name. He said, from FIDA, do you have lawyers who can represent these victims of GBV in case they can't afford one?
Thank you so much. The first question was a bit unclear.
Yes, the first question was about what kind of punishment should be given to the perpetrators of this, who commit this heinous crime of GBV.
And the second was...
Those who were freed. Do you think it was a fair game?
Well, you see, at the end of the whether they were freed or not, we have to look at the law and what the judge was presented. You know, a judge usually gives the ruling based on the evidence they are given.
Yeah.
So we have to, let's say, appreciate.
Abide by their rulings.
Well, there is always appeal.
Yeah.
There's always appeal. That's why we have the second option of appeal all the way to the Supreme Court. But the whole thing is that the whole process of appealing is if you have an issue with how he handled it.
But for now, FIDA is satisfied with their ruling, right? Of our will, for example.
Well, it was by the law.
Yeah.
You know, the rest did not, the other two friends were not, were not found having had a hand in killing her, so they were accessories, and hence they were imprisoned.
Yeah.
Him, who we knew, was the murderer and also the rapist. And of course, when you're charged, when you do a crime, if you do several crimes, the one with the highest penalty takes precedent over the over the lesser sentence. So I would assume his charge sheet looked murder count one, then rape count two. And of course, once you're sentenced to death, you cannot serve the 14 years in prison. So that was, I'm assuming, how the judge assessed the situation by the evidence given. Of course, I don't think the punishment is fits the crime as per the penal code right now. And that's why we are actually trying to push for a separate GBV bill, gender-based violence bill. If you look at our neighbors, for example, the Kenya Sexual Offences Act, it has a more, the scope of GBV is enlarged, you know. You have the issues of incest that are included. You have issues of, now here in South Sudan, it's just rape. So whether you're two years old, we've had a child of two years old, we've seen 90-year-olds, we've seen 30-year-olds, it's all under rape. So the severity is not really taken into consideration. Whereas in Kenya, if you're under 12, that is automatically life imprisonment, you know. And of course, from 13 to 15, you get the 25 from like that. So it is always the elements to understand it, to understand the crime. Other aspects of where there's no actual rape that happens, rape being penetration. So maybe they're playing with a child, sexual parts. There's also now that has also been encompassed in their act under sexual offences, which is 10 years. So they have a penalty for everything, you know, to really make sure every ground is covered.
Which we don't have here.
And we are really trying to push together with the Ministry of Gender to really push for this bill to come through. So that is also part of why we need the citizens to go about it in really dealing with our policymakers and legislators. That is the best way to hold them accountable, as opposed to getting that 50 tamoya.
Okay. Now the question of this person who sent the message here in Juba with that name, does FIDA have lawyers who can represent these victims of GBV in case they can't afford one?
Yes, we do. One of our arms is actually Access to Justice, where we provide legal aid to survivors of GBV and women in general. Should you have an issue with land, should you have an issue that is giving you more headache because you're a woman, especially, our doors are always open. We represent children, and even through our referral pathways, whenever they get survivors who need legal advice, we are always a call away. So through our networks, we are able to really reach our clients as much as possible.
Ustaz James Ding Garang from Northern Baragazal is asking thank you so much for your initiative, but his question is, how can we avoid the culture of silence, since the wrongdoers are not prosecuted and you can't come forward because of stigma to come and begin reporting, because you'll go back to the same house, you'll be beaten sometimes, and that kind of fear is there?
Yeah, I think one of it is also to have these discussions amongst ourselves, you know, as a community. That's why one of our suggestions was community engagements among the community. Let men sit down together and really discuss, you know, what is it about, what is masculinity to us? Are we going to keep beating women and call it masculinity? Are we going to neglect children and our wives and keep having 20 wives? You know, let us define what masculinity is in our society's context and hold each other accountable for it. In, you know, not just say we protect women, but only to stop them from going clubbing. You cannot protect them when something happens to them in the house, you know. Another aspect of it is holding people accountable. We need to see people actually go to jail for these things, and not just the small people who, you know, even the big people, you know. This is all kabirs that might have that have this privilege and power that protects them. We need to also see a few big heads rule, because that is how you can actually say your
criminal justice system is working. Are they also involved in this practice from your findings?
Yes. Yeah.
So how do we get? How do you ensure that they also face the law? Because there's no one who's above the law.
The idea is that no one is above the law, And we are having serious discussions behind the scenes with our stakeholders, including the Human Rights Commission. The chairman has always had an open door policy also to us about these issues. We are now talking with the policymakers of both Interior and Defense currently about these issues and how to navigate. And you find even some of these issues they themselves, even on the upper level, do not get the data about what's happening in their own ranks. Mm-hmm. You know, so even them, they're working on what they have as the leaders of it. So we're having those discussions. We're trying to see how we can actually have systems that hold these people accountable, no matter the position in society.
Right. What is the role of the parents in this regard here? Because I'm sure everyone comes from a family, but all this is also happening in the families.
Yes, I think we need to be very alert. The nature of rape has changed. Outside of the conflict-related sexual violence we experience with the clashes, the nature of rape has changed. It's no longer that stranger that we think will jump on us as we walk home. Mm-hmm. It's usually a neighbor. It's usually a classmate. It's usually an uncle. You know, it's a circle person. You know, and it's someone who is able to study the family and study the movements and know when this child is alone. You know, and they're able to now see how they can move around and gallivant. Even the thing of having, I think there's always this running joke that African children raise themselves, but it's also good to keep an extra eye on that child, have an open discussion, open dialogue, relationship with those children, not have a relationship of fear. You know, if something happens to your child, let you be the first person they think of to come and tell. Have that open, loving relationship with the child, not every day noise, mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the day, it's just to be watchful, because it's a communal thing. It's a communal thing, and we are part of, we're trying to talk about also having a community policing engagement, how police can have relationships with the parents, how they can train the parents on what to watch out for, what to see, how to notice what your child is doing out of the ordinary, you know, these things. And also they also try and strengthen the community engagements, mm-hmm. amongst the two institutions.
0912062079 is our number, or 0912062950. Those are all the lines you can call or send us a short SMS to our SMS number 0912177141. You can get in touch and ask your question to Barbara Aromo, who is with me here in the studio, talking more about their initiative to curtail the issues of sexual gender-based violence that remains a major concern across the country, and more especially here in Central Equatoria State. And they are yet to move and find out what's happening in the rest of the states. Hello, Redimira. Hello.
Hello, Dan.
Yes, your name?
Hello. Yes, I'm
0912062079 is our number to call. The issue of awareness, what would you say about the level of awareness? Are you satisfied as FIDA of the level of awareness on this SGBV, or you think more need to be done?
I was happy with the response in Juba. Mm. Outside of the big terminologies, you know, SGBV and development, and outside of the big terms,
yeah.
If you explain what it is, you know, from the way I've given you the examples,
yeah.
economic abuse, stay at home, don't worry.
Yeah.
Whenever we explained to the people outside of the big terminologies, they were able to actually recognize that in their lives.
They're living, saying.
Exactly. So they're aware of this thing. And I think the thing is, they didn't know what next. They are, you know, they didn't know if, you know, when there's a stone in your shoe, but you're unaware of,
yeah,
are we allowed to remove it?
In the middle of
you know, so I think the next step is the avenues. Okay, now it has happened to you. What can we do next, you know? And in the next aspect, what we have understood is that they want to, but they are fearful of how the case will be handled.
Yeah.
So that's why we really felt the institutions need to be ready for when the people come, you know.
Right.
So let's strengthen, let's keep them caring and conflict and gender sensitive and open for when that victim is ready to talk. Because you really, there's no time limit. There's no time for a victim to come and talk. When they're ready, they're ready. And even as a community, we need to also have a healing environment of these survivors.
Mm. Right. 0912062079. Hello, Redimira. Hello.
Hello, Redimira.
Yes, your name.
Mario from Awit.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I just have a question. And women that misbehave in the family. So when you tell them that you walk like this, they don't believe. When you say you walk like this, they don't believe. So what are we going to do to that woman? So that is my question.
Okay. 0912062079 or 0912062950. Those are all our lines. You can call. Hello.
Yes.
Your name? Yes, your name.
My name is Akwok Anyang Akwok.
Akwok from okay, go ahead. Go ahead from Bor.
My question is, what can we tell to the woman who used to practice that? Who usually practice? What can we tell to them?
Who does what?
Who does sexual abuse?
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your question from Bor town of Jonglei State. And this one here is coming in from Abdallah. And Abdallah is writing from Ye River County of Central Equatorial State. He says, what advice will you give to the people who are encouraging bribery since no one is above the law? Because this is one of the major obstacles why justice is not served to the victims always. Let's begin with Abdallah from Ye.
Okay. I think that is part of the accountability we were talking about outside of the law enforcement themselves. One part of it was we were trying to discuss on an avenue to have a reporting mechanism where even when we have issues if there are some bad apples in the force,
yeah,
how can we address those few bad apples and stop it from spoiling the whole,
yeah,
the whole unit or the whole station as a whole? So, of course, part of the policy, as we're talking to the members of parliament, the technical committee for internal affairs, part of the security policy they're making, and together also with the ministry, we are trying to see how we can have an oversight authority. You know, if you look at, again, our neighbors have a similar thing. I think in Kenya's, it's IPOA, the Internal Oversight Police Oversight Authority, where citizens are able to now go and report these police officers. And of course, part of being able to report this police officer is knowing who the officer is. So even the whole aspect of identification, the training, the SOPs of the officers, being when they're addressing you, they of course come and tell you, yes, my name is Sunny Martin, I am officer so and so, Budele, and I am here to I'm here to arrest you because of your right, you know, the Miranda rights generally. So part of that training and all that, so to also even you have an understanding, if I'm being arrested, am I being manhandled, is this arrest going according to procedure? And these are also part of things that help to the in the case when it's happening, you know. A poorly done arrest can have a whole case thrown out. Yes, so that's why we need them to do the exact perfect job as possible, as perfect can be, you know. But of course, we need them to have the right training. We need to have them the mechanisms for us also to hold them accountable, as much as we are also empowering them.
When the question of there are some people who spark chaos in the houses.
I don't know. I think he was asking about how to advise women who don't want to listen, and
then they
get attacked.
Yes, yes.
I think the least you can do is not cause injury to them. Don't assault them. Because I don't think there is any advice really, or there is any mannerism in a way someone is living their life that is not harming you, that can cause you to go and rape them, to teach them a lesson. Those are the excuses we've been getting by some of these people who rape these. You know, I do not like how this girl was talking to me. So you raped her? You know? You know. Some of these, those are the things. You see how that we have a culture where women don't even normally look at men in the eye. The way we are sitting down and talking, and you don't even look at a man will just come and slap you because you looked at him in the eye. So what are these? You know. So these are things. The least you can do, advise, but you're not allowed to assault someone. You're not allowed to inflict harm on someone, especially if whatever they're doing is not against the law.
So, from your findings and your recommendation, what next? What do you want to achieve at the end of the day?
I think at the end of the day, we want to push those policies through. One thing, we need to have a strong law enforcement system. So we need to push those. We need to make sure they're not only equipped, but they are trained. They have the facilities. They have the offices. They have the supporting casts. You know, they have the psychosocial support officer at the station. They're able to. So we want them to be able to do their job. You know, let them have their salaries on time. Let them have to be able to do their job, because you cannot complain someone is being bribed, and they're human. They're starving also, you know. Outside of that, we want the international community to also come in and also partner with national NGOs, because we are the ones who are actually on the grassroots and doing the legwork, and we are talking to the communities. We are actually understanding what the community is trying to say, together with the lead, with the local government, together even with the police. So it's also a good time to also see how we can collaborate effectively, and see how where we can reach where they cannot reach, and also partner together like that.
Yes, somebody who may be listening to this and appreciate your initiative and say, okay, much as you are trying really to push the agenda through all these different mechanisms, but one of the major obstacle, you may agree with them, is that we don't have a unified force right now, a national army. We have so many armed group in the country, here and there. Do you see that as an obstacle to your efforts?
It is an obstacle. I mean, lack of peace is always an obstacle, because you cannot have a conversation when there's war around. You know, we cannot go to those areas where there's chaos and have an actual discussion and be able to get down to what is actually disturbing the community. So peace is a must. Peace is a must.
Okay, and finally, for women and men listening to you, what is your final advice you'll give them in order to end this GBV in the country? If not ending, maybe minimize.
I think we need to have more open and honest discussions with ourselves. With long conflicts, a character of a nation changes. We need to look down and interrogate ourselves. What is it about ourselves that we have gotten to this point where children are now being killed, and a foreigner can be comfortable to come to your country, attempt to molest two other girls, and finalize by killing another, you know? Because at the end of the day, even us, we are responsible for that, the death that happened. At the end of the day, what made that foreigner comfortable enough and able to get confident that he'll get away with it so many times that he was able to do that? We need to take responsibility over our own country. We need to get involved in our lawmaking processes and policies. We need to be able to talk and actually have our voices heard and tell what is happening on the ground.
Barbara, thank you so much for talking to us. We hope to talk to you some other time. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Annie.